The top five on the Rokan Show.
Five.
Let's go.
Four, 3, 2, 1.
Now, it's the top five at five on the Rokan Show, sponsored by the Hip and Knee Center, where they help you feel new again.
Ready?
Yes.
Yes.
Get on with it.
Yes, it's the Rokan Show, top five at five, five most newsworthy, important, funny, weird sound bites of the last 24 hours. That's generally how we like to look at this. All right, here we go. Checking in at
number five.
Well, the president today unleashed his fury against those who had tried to impeach him at a prayer breakfast first. And then there was an event at the White House. We'll get to that in a second. But at a prayer breakfast. Now, remember, this is a prayer breakfast, a national day of prayer. And, of course, it was a bit of a whiplashy kind of message because he's contrasting the speakers who had come up before him, and that many of them are men and women of the cloth, including keynote speaker and Harvard professor Arthur Brooks, who had described a crisis of contempt and polarization in the nation, urged those in attendance to gather and love your enemies. Right. That comes right from Christ. That's the point of that. But then but the president was like, you know what? That's for another day. What about Mitt Romney?
I don't like people who use their faith as justification for doing what they know is wrong.
I don't know. I wouldn't necessarily think watching Mitt Romney yesterday, they thought it was wrong. But he did use his faith to come up with the argument for why Mitt Romney used his idea of faith as a member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints to be the guy that said, listen, based on my covenant with God, I believe that this is what the president did, and I think it was wrong, and so I'm going to vote to convict on one count, one of the two counts, not both counts. And he did it, and he will probably not be heard from again. And then he talked about Nancy Pelosi.
Nor do I like people who say, I pray for you, when they know that that's not so. So many people have been hurt, and we can't let that go on.
This was the prayer breakfast. Hour and a half later, he was at the White House, and at the White House, in front of a group of his supporters, his lawyers from the impeachment trial, other members of the cabinet, and members of the House and the Senate who had been particularly helpful to him during the process, or they had taken his side during the process, and he called them all out and he thanked them for what they were for all the things that that they had done. And he was a little, it was interesting because in the morning, he had a little bit more of an angry tone, I thought, at the prayer breakfast. And then it was a little lighter because he came out to hail to the chief. There was a lot of pomp and circumstance to the White House event today. And I think he was emboldened by that and bolstered by that. So I think his mood was a little lighter. But at the end of the day, the one thing that is happening here is that, however you put it, it's a victory lap because the president did win. He was holding up the newspapers in which he said, the president acquitted or Trump acquitted on the Washington Post. And then there was another just acquitted headline that he held up. He liked to show that off. And I think that the president believes that this is going to be a big help for him in the election. And this is going to be a point he's going to use this as a talking point to keep moving forward about, see, this was all fake. It was all fake news. It was a hoax. Now, unfortunately, there are going to be some other things that are going to happen along the way, I think, that are going to go the other way for him, which is the Bolton book is going to come out. There are going to be some other people that are going to come out. Remember, there was the anonymous guy or woman who wrote the book. That person's going to reveal themselves before the election. There are some other pieces here. People who are going to have other stories from being inside the Trump White House, and we'll just have to see how that all goes. But at this moment, this is a particularly good week for Donald Trump. You had the complete cluster F in Iowa for the Democratic caucus, which makes Democrats look confused. And it also leads to I think Bernie Sanders is completely unelectable. Donald Trump will, right now, the numbers show that Donald Trump would beat Bernie Sanders going away. Pete Buttigieg is an untested character, so I'm not quite sure what's going to happen there. But the good news for the president is that Joe Biden slipped down to fourth, did not do particularly well. And if he doesn't do well in New Hampshire next week, probably not good for him. So the president of the United States is having a great week. It is 1 week in February, with the election still to come in November. That's many, many months away. A lot of things can happen. But at this point, it's I would say it's a game and set in the first set here to Donald Trump. Now, there's a little change in tone from when Bill Clinton addressed the nation after his acquittal.
I want to say again to the American people how profoundly sorry I am for what I said and did to trigger these events and the great burden they have imposed on the Congress and on the American people. This can be, and this must be, a time of reconciliation and renewal for America.
Loser. That's the way, I think this is the way you have to look at it. I did get an email today from the Trump campaign that said, "Sorry, haters, I'm not going anywhere," and said that and went on to say, "I have been a perfect president." So there you have it. Victory lap right there. Okay. We'll get to your 4-3-2-1, but first, here is Lauren Lapka. She's got the traffic and the weather.
When it comes to the weather, we all want to know, what did Skilling say? Watch for updated forecasts from Chicago's most trusted meteorologist, Tom Skilling, weeknights on WGN-TV.
Top 5-5 continues. We're up to
number 4.
Tax on CTA trains and buses keep making headlines. WGN-TV's Lourdes Duarte obtained data from the CTA, which shows the number of reported bus system assaults were 73. There were 73 in 2018, up from 62 the previous year. But as of mid-July in 2019, there were 47. This is, so it's growing every year by about 20%. Keith Hill runs the Chicago Transit Union, and he says that more needs to be done for not only his employees, but of course, the traveling public.
Yeah, spitting incidents, fair disputes, school kids that fight, simple assaults. We have a silent alarm we can push. We've been complaining for about 2 or 3 years to check, to have CTA check them to make sure it works.
They don't work?
We think quite a bit of them don't work. We think over 70% of the fleet is probably not functioning correctly. It would be nice and ideal to have an officer on each bus, but that's not realistic. Actually, one of the things that the union is thinking about is going back to security, being our own security detail. You know, we have a concern about the passengers and the drivers. And we've had a couple shootings on a bus where the operators had to jump out the window.
The buses do have the silent alarm, theoretically, where they can just press a button and then police will surround the bus without anybody realizing what's going on. That's theoretically how that system is supposed to work. And of course, also, the silent alarms on the trains. Now, the trains, however, the first and most important thing they should do on the trains, obviously, you need increased patrols on the platforms themselves. And again, that just requires more police officers. And I'm sick and tired of listening to the city of Chicago keep telling us and whoever the superintendent is at the time tell us, well, we don't really need more police. We just need, you know, we need to just have a better, scheme for using the police. That is not true. We need more police. That is just the bottom line. And I know it's an expensive proposition, but it is a necessary proposition because Chicago cannot withstand this reputation that we are getting. We cannot continue to move forward and progress as an economic institution unless we do eventually tackle this. And the CTA problem is getting worse. It is not getting better. And what they need to do, and this is important, is they need to replace, the CTA needs to add the conductors back to the trains. You got the motorman who's up in the front, but they used to have conductors who were in the train itself, and they would move between the cars, and they're the people that would look out the windows and make sure the doors were opening and all that. And I know that's all electronic now, theoretically, but it was a safety measure because those guys have radios, and they're capable of making they don't have to make the announcements anymore. There's some dissonant voice that does that, but they can be a presence, an official presence. And I just think that that's absolutely, absolutely necessary. I know you're saying, well, you're not paying for it. Well, we're all paying for it in the long run. So if I just spent a few minutes with the mayor, this would all work out better for us. So speaking of the police, so here is at a press conference earlier to announce the arrest of a suspect who shot someone on the Blue Line train stop in the South Loop, UIC. Chicago Police Interim Superintendent Charlie Beck says he's working with the CTA to try to beef up security.
Every crime is important, obviously, but when you attack a system that almost half of the people of Chicago use every day, then that's something that affects everybody. And as a matter of fact, I'm meeting with CTA tomorrow to discuss police deployment in the transit system, and we're going to look at increasing our efforts there. I think it's really important that people feel safe on public transportation and that public transportation is able to function effectively.
And they do have one of the best networks of security systems, the cameras and all the rest of that at the CTA, than you have in almost any other institution in Chicago. They're great. You can see it like on the news. When something goes wrong, they will show you a still photograph of the perpetrator who might be on the loose, and they're amazingly defined pictures, right? They've got really good systems. It's just about having enough people to help make that work, whether it's Chicago police personnel or their own security personnel or their own employees along the way. All right. Checking in at, don't tell me,
number three.
Thank you. You told me. Notorious Ponzi schemer Bernard Madoff is asking to get out of the pokey. You might recall he got a 150-year sentence for stealing billions of dollars from people, ruining lives, creating an economic catastrophe amongst his investors. Now, he says he's got end-stage kidney disease and other chronic serious medical conditions. His doctors have told him he has 18 months to live. First of all, no doctor tells you how many months to live you have. No doctor tells you that anymore. That's only in movies when they go, "Doc, give it to me straight. How much time do I got?" "Oh, well, you've got 6 weeks to live." They never say that. And if they were to say it, they'd say, "Get your affairs in order," because they mean you're going to die within 2 weeks. That's the only thing they know. They never say it's about 18 months. Could be 2 years. We're not quite sure. You might be able to, you get like 18 months, you can do 6 months going around the world. You got this, you got that. I mean, come on! So, no less a public figure than Zsa Zsa Gabor's widower, and Zsa Zsa Gabor was one of the people taken by Bernie Madoff. You might remember her. She was famous for being famous. She was like the original Kardashian. Her widower, who's Austrian-American businessman Frederick Prinz von Anhalt, who's been calling himself a prince even though he's not for years. Also another guy. He used to walk around in a Porsche jacket, Porsche hat, Porsche pants, and Porsche shoes. He ran into the cameras of TMZ. They somehow found him to comment on Bernie Madoff, and it's just as you'd expect.
If he has another 18 months to live, that's a little too long, you know. I mean, we should let him in another 16 months and then let him out the last 2 months. That would be okay. I could live with that. And furthermore, if he has kidney failure, I'm sure he has lots of accounts people don't even know yet about it, you know. He has so much money outside. So, yeah, they should let him out to get all the rest of the money and then he can buy himself some new kidneys, you know. There's lots of things you can do with your health. You can buy a new heart. You can buy a new lung. So he can do that. But just to let him out, you know, 18 months, that's a little too bad.
Thank God Prince Frederick von Anhalt speaks the truth. Let him out so he can buy his own lungs. Shut up. All right. Moving along. Two.
Number two.
Gayle King has responded to backlash over her asking about Kobe Bryant's rape case in an interview with the WNBA star Lisa Leslie. Now, this all kind of came to light here because of a short clip on the CBS Morning News interview that was posted on social media. And King asked Leslie if she thinks that Bryant's legacy is complicated by the sexual assault charge.
It's been said that his legacy is complicated because of a sexual assault charge, which was dismissed in 2003, 2004. Is it complicated for you as a woman, as a WNBA player? Is it even a fair question to talk about it, considering he's no longer with us and that it was resolved? Or is it really part of his history?
I think that the media should be more respectful at this time. It's like if you had questions about it, you've had many years to ask him that.
So Gayle King then had to go on Instagram and explain that she didn't realize that that clip was going to make it out onto the social media.
I know that if I had only seen the clip that you saw, I'd be extremely angry with me too. I am mortified, I'm embarrassed, and I am very angry. Unbeknownst to me, my network put up a clip from a very wide-ranging interview, totally taken out of context, and when you see it that way, it's very jarring. It's jarring to me. I didn't even know anything about it. I started getting calls. What the hell are you doing? I did not know what people are talking about. So I've been told, or I've been advised, to say nothing. Just let it go. People will drag you. People will troll you. It'll be over in a couple of days. But that's not good enough for me.
Well, it's going to have to be good enough for you, because that's the way it's going to go. It's not an unfair question to ask. I mean, people are asking it, but it is. But I think Lisa Leslie's answer to that is actually appropriate, which is there have been many intervening years here, and the Kobe Bryant's behavior in the aftermath, and his devotion to his family, and his devotion to his wife, and his devotion to the community, and all the other things that he's turned himself toward, certainly does change the image of what happened there. And again, this was a case that could not go to criminal trial. It ended up being settled civilly, and there are certainly a lot of questions about it. It was not a cut and dried case of a sexual assault. So I just, you know what, if we can't even get along, we can't even figure that out right now, let alone the bigger issues. And finally, checking in at
number one.
Kelly Kay does not appear to have any regrets about charging the field during the Super Bowl. She tried to go streaking in a bikini, but was tackled by a red jacket clad security person during the first half of the game. She's a 27-year-old social media influencer.
Of course she is.
That makes her very famous, by the way, in case you're wondering. And she wanted to have an Instagram moment. That's what she said. So she spoke to TMZ and says she doesn't understand why this was taken so seriously.
Another thing that was just like, I didn't expect and didn't think about, was the FBI and Homeland Security was interrogating me. And it's like six guys from the FBI. And I'm like, is this even real? Like, you hear about the FBI, but you never think that the FBI is going to be like interrogating you. And they're just grilling me with questions, and they're like, if you cooperate, maybe you won't go to jail. And because at first I wasn't talking to them at all, and they got so mad because I like wouldn't speak. Then they threw me in the holding cell with four other girls. So yeah,
Becca and Amber.
Oh god,
we'll play more of her a little later on. I gotta close this thing up. There's just too much happening in my head.
The top five at five.